It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Kevin Marks joins Jeff Jarvis as we talk about, well, everything. The new British Prime Minister, indie web, BitTorrents and JavaScript, a little bit of Pokemon Go, but, you know, don't worry, not a whole lot. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 361, recorded Wednesday, July 13th, 2016. There is only one flavor of herring. This Week in Google is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest, not just from Google. Google's in the name, but please don't hold us to it. Because when you have a panel of great people like Jeff Jarvis and Kevin Marks, you want to talk about whatever you want to talk about. Jeff Jarvis is here, professor of journalism at CUNY, the City University of New York, blogger at Buzz Machine, author of many a great book, including, of course, Geek-Sparing Gifts, all about reinventing news, and What Would Google Do, and Public Parts.
And I'm like level minus six on Pokemon Go.
Yeah, I think from now on, when you are introduced, you have to tell us your Pokemon Go.
No, don't do that.
Yeah, that's important. No, that's going to be, it's a new rule. Okay.
I went down the street and I was just praying to get some beast on the New York Times logo next to us.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing now, is take pictures of Pokemon all over the place. There's even one on number 10 Downing Street as David Cameron is leaving. There's a Pokemon apparently moving in.
Oh, I've got to find it.
That's on the BBC feed. Kevin Marks is also here. He is, of course, Kevin Marks, the original. We love Kevin. He worked at BBC and then at Apple, Google, BT, he's been everywhere, man.
You're so good. I'm named stupid three times, apparently.
Yeah. Kevin Marks. I guess you could figure out from his name what his website and Twitter handle are. Stacey has the week off. Stacey Higginbotham, normally here. She's traveling. And we are hoping soon that the third or fourth member of our crew will join us. Dan Lyons, of course. We love Dan, the fake Steve Jobs. He wrote for a long time for Newsweek magazine, then had some misadventures in startup land. He wrote a book called Disrupted, all about it. Then went to work for Silicon Valley, the TV show. His post today on Facebook says, went to Hollywood, got the jacket. He has, as you said, Jeff, the best swag ever.
Ever.
A Pied Piper jacket. The jacket that is so hideous. This was kind of the highlight of season three, I think. The jacket. Anyway, Dan, he said he's going to be busy through July, so he should be joining us soon. I hope. I'm crossing our fingers. Anyway, still don't have a commitment. He may be hedging his, waiting to see if Hollywood calls or something like that. So both of you, I thought for sure this would be the first show I've done all week that doesn't mention Pokemon Go. I thought there's no way Jeff and Kevin.
Farts.
Yeah, there's no, not old, just serious. I thought there's no way these guys, these are serious guys. They're playing this dumb game.
How could you not?
You were saying, Jeff, that you see people playing in Manhattan everywhere?
Yes, it's really amazing because I walked down the street and now I see somebody standing there. Number one, you can tell if they're doing the motion.
Oh, yeah, you really can tell because if somebody's playing Pokemon Go, they keep their phone out, waiting for the buzz that says a Pokemon is nearby. So if you're like me and you're surreptitious, you're walking, but your phone is there. And when you feel the buzz, then you start seeing this as they play the game. Oh, wait a minute, I just got a buzz. And seriously. And then you start, and I'll show you, I'll demonstrate the motion because I'm actually going to fight a wild Zubat. And then you see this kind of finger up motion as they shoot the Pokeballs at the Zubat and try to take it home for their collection. So this game came out a week ago on Wednesday afternoon. took everybody by surprise, except I guess people were really paying close attention. Somebody just got something.
something appeared, yeah.
Yeah, that's the cry of the wild something. Yeah, so you hear their cry, and then Kevin's just playing the game for the first time, I think.
I'm a lousy shot.
Yeah, it's hard. So you notice I turned off the augmented reality, which was...
Yeah, I was going to ask why. I think that's part of the fun of it, isn't it?
It's the fun of it, but it also saps battery life.
Oh, boy, does it, yeah.
Because your camera's on all the time. So you could turn that off, and that will help. And then it also it makes it a little bit harder. I find it's easier, at least for me, without the augmented reality. There you go. You caught it, Kevin. Nice. So that's added to your Pokey collection. You can now turn the sound
down. I was in Facebook's New York headquarters yesterday. And,
oh, good. You got an Enax? Snake spelled backwards?
I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, that's a really good one.
Ecans.
Ecans. Keep the Ecans, yeah. So your idea is you're going to get these. These are baby Pokemon that you evolve to stronger and stronger, sometimes once or twice. And then...
Ta-da!
You caught another one. There's a bunch of them around your house.
Well, that's because I just signed up, so they were easy ones, right?
Yeah, not necessarily. Usually you have to walk. That's the... The virtue of this game. I mean,
another version for Brits.
It's not. It's only U.S., Australia, Canada. Carson told me it rolls out today in Germany, which is surprising because, frankly, the servers have been very unreliable because so many people are signing up in those three countries. And Niantic, the company that made this, which is a former Google company, has said we're not going to roll it out as fast as we thought globally. However, the thing people can do, and I don't recommend this, you can download on Android, sideload an APK from one of the... Can you turn that down? I never thought I'd say that.
You've lost Kevin.
He enjoyed the game a little too much. Oh, he got away. He escaped. That one escaped.
No, it didn't.
Reduce my predictions about progress in the future by about a year and a half based on losing Kevin Marks's brain power for that long.
Not just Kevin, but look at that. I mean, if you see Kevin, imagine all the brilliant people. Elon Musk has announced there won't be a new Tesla because he's busy. No, that's a joke. So here you can sideload it on Android, but also if you're on iOS, apparently, this is kind of a loophole. You can sign up for the U.S. store and get it in any country. Apparently, somebody... on number 10 Downing Street has signed up because a wild Pokemon has been sighted at the house of the Prime Minister, outgoing Prime Minister David Cameron. There is a Pikachu right there in front of number 10 Downing Street. Well, not anymore. It's been captured.
Cannibals,
so there's the good news.
There's the Downing Street cat.
So is this what happens, by the way, Kevin? Is the Prime Minister actually just moves out, his whole family? They just move out of the house?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, he's moved out.
But do we know who the new Prime Minister is?
Yes, well, yeah. Theresa May.
It is going to be Theresa May. So she is she now officially the Prime Minister?
Yes, she met the Queen.
She curtsied to the Queen this morning.
Oh, that's right. I remember that great scene from the movie.
Yeah. There was a picture online of her curtsying, which made me think, the only reason I wish we had a Queen is so that Donald Trump would have to curtsy.
I'd like to see him curtsy
yes.
with those girly hands.
It is this weird thing. I mean, basically the leader of the largest party is the prime minister, which means that if what happened here was Cameron resigned as leader of the Conservative Party and as prime minister, which means there was an election within his party, and that ran last week, and then over the weekend. It was supposed to go to a ballot of all the members, but the second place person dropped out, which means Theresa May became prime minister.
It wasn't really an election, even. It was just a...
Well, it was an election, but only by the MPs.
Right.
And
it wasn't contested, so they didn't have to. Yeah. So there
Leo,
she is.
At the bottom of other, you heard Cameron's song as he walked back into 10 Downing, right?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. Oh, so go to the Cameron's lament. This is just too British and too beautiful.
So
as his mic was on, as he walks back into number 10 down
after saying goodbye.
Yes, basically.
Okay.
And if you go to that, okay, so now go to the one with the piano. Go to the one. No, stop.
This one?
You want to hear the original.
Oh, is that the original up there, Kevin? Is it there?
Isn't the original there?
This is fantasy.
I'm not sure the original is there. So if you go to the one with the piano with the computer, that one, you'll hear it. So you want to turn the sound up and play this.
Okay.
Do it again. He's got it. He goes in.
Right.
Right. Do, 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 do.
What's he doing? Right. Do we recognize that, or is it just...
Well, no. So now watch what she does with this.
Yes, but then he raises it to an E flat. So it's kind of out of tune. So I'm going to choose... because it's much nicer.
This is like Grieg. Oh, my God. She's making it...
Yeah. Go up with some of the others. They're just wonderful.
This is lovely.
So Brit.
Do, do, do.
I was shutting down my studio at about midnight last night, finishing a long day's composing, and I checked my phone and saw that this had happened yesterday. I kind of missed it, you know, had a listen to it, and it instantly inspired this melody and finishing the job, as it were. I mean, the thing is about music, you know, music, for me, penetrates the heart in a way that sometimes words can't. And actually, I was really struck with the response yesterday to his singing. Actually, this guy who's running the country actually does have a heart, you know, and he has deep emotions. And whatever those emotions are, I mean, people have different ideas as to what he was trying to...
he didn't know he was mic'd, right? I mean, he just... this was like a person going back to work. Da-da-da-da. I do that. Of course, his going back to work is packing the house and getting out.
Right. Trying to book a moving company on 2 days' notice in central London.
All right, Jeff, I see you pointing down. Oh, is he?
I was turning down my mic to listen to it. Go down one more, just one more on the page.
Okay.
There's a choral group, the Fugue Camerata.
The Fugue Camerata.
Yeah, you see it? Right, no, keep going. Right there.
Yeah, let's hear this one.
Right.
Oh, you have to say right.
Yes, there'll always be an England. It'll be tiny and strange, but there'll always be an England.
This is why there will always be a great
Britain. Isn't that the greatest?
Wow.
That's wonderful. I love it. Yep.
I do love
that. It's been one of those weeks in England.
And then Theresa May has to curtsy to the Queen and walk out backwards afterwards. And the Queen always carries her purse with her, which I think is an odd but kind of somewhat charming affectation. Because, you know, be honest with you, what could be in there? Not money.
Veep has a purse carrier. You think the Queen could?
Yeah.
Was this like a coded Thatcher reference? the Queen is passing on the ceremonial handbag. You know?
The ceremonial handbag. it is said that I think it was who was it that said that to the Queen everything smells as fresh paint.
Yes.
She never goes anywhere that isn't just painted.
Yes,
the world smells of fresh paint. I think that was Alan Bennett that said that.
Yes, well, that sounds likely.
Yeah, I love Alan Bennett. Oh my God, I love him. He is not well known in the U.S. It's a shame. Well, but that movie they made about the woman in the driveway.
Yes.
Yeah, that's probably America's introduction to Alan Bennett.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I know.
there's a lot more there, but yes.
Well,
that was a good film, though.
Am I wrong? Does anybody know who Alan Bennett is?
Okay, chat room. Do you know who Alan Bennett is?
And yet they.
Silence.
No one knows. And yet the only reason I know is because my mom gave me a book of his short stories, and I fell in love with his stuff. He wrote The Madness of George III, which you might know. But he is quite a funny and, of course, very literate. He started with Cook and Moore, I guess, and Jonathan Miller and Beyond the Fringe.
Yeah, Beyond the Fringe was great. Yeah. And then they did TW3. He was involved in that as well.
This was The Week That Was, which was a great satire. But again, nobody knows that in the U.S., I think.
How did your mother know? Give
it is 50 years ago.
Well, we only know British stuff that we've done ourselves, like The Office, you know, that we've remade.
Yeah.
And you couldn't really remake Alan Bennett stuff. It wouldn't work.
Yeah, it's too British.
I'd see you doing The History Boys or something.
Yeah,
Wouldn't map.
Yeah. What would you recommend for somebody? I think I have the Alan Bennett reader.
Read his stories. He writes wonderfully, and it has this tone. I mean, but he's done. I'd actually recommend seeing the film. That will decide whether you you like his style, because that was very in his style.
Yeah.
But like we've done for film, but he's done lots of television stuff as well. He used to, when I was working in London, he lived around the corner from our offices, so we'd really? Always see him in the cafe. Yeah.
The movie is called The Lady in the Van.
Yes.
And
Maggie Smith is the lady in the van.
And it's a true story, right? About a woman who lived in his yes. driveway for some time.
Yeah. Like 20 years, yes. Yeah, so she was parked his van outside the street, and his neighbors kept trying to move her on, and he said, well, you could park on my driveway for a bit, and she just stayed.
She stayed.
Yes.
So again, there will always be a Britain. I hope to God. What's your take on Brexit? Actually, we haven't talked to you, Kevin Mark, since Brexit.
Oh, that's right.
Okay, well, it's one of those things. It's like no one was expecting this to happen. I think what happened was they were trying to replay what happened in 1975. So if you remember,
I remember 1975 and the debate over whether to join the EU.
Yes. Now there's a wonderful photograph which I will try and find for you, which is Margaret Thatcher, who had just become leader of the opposition, campaigning for being in the European Union. I think I posted it to
you. I think I've seen it.
But where are my photos? So the point is, in 1975, if you actually read about the 1975 referendum, it is almost exactly the same.
She had a really ugly sweater, right?
She had a really ugly sweater and a...
I think we have it.
You have it?
Yeah, look at mine.
Go back one. There's a better one that has the poster as well.
That's the one,
yes. Support your local continent. And then there's a little UK flag with its head in the sand.
But Britain is not on the continent.
Well, no, that's why it's called support your local continent. In the UK, you say local, the continent is how you refer
to
Europe.
Near you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're on
They are
technically there's a continental shelf, and we are on part of the continent. But yes, in the UK, you refer to the rest of Europe as the continent. Not ironically, it's to say,
it's the continent.
The continent
over there, across,
as opposed to us on this island.
We're across the pond. They're the continent.
Yes. So, but if you actually read the history of the 1975 referendum, the parallel is almost exact. Basically, Wilson. Had just won the election. There was some contention within his party about wanting to join or leave the European Union. So they had this referendum. They let the cabinet campaign on both sides, but they got the leader of the opposition to campaign with the prime minister to say, we think this is a good thing, and hence that picture of Thatcher doing that. So I imagine some civil servant somewhere said, well, look, this is how you do it. Look, we've done this before. Or some campaign or something took Cameron into this. And then it didn't work because, the leader of the opposition didn't really line up and campaign with him, though most of the Labour members did. Labour supporters did vote for remaining. The Conservative Party split itself very, very broadly, and then there's UKIP, which has been making hay with this issue for years.
And then Nigel Farage, after winning, says, "Okay, I'm done here. My work is done here. Good luck. We'll see you later."
And there was.
But that is the height. And you know what? We may have the same thing because there's some speculation that Mr. Trump, should he win election as president, will then resign.
That was Howard Stern's platform, you know, when he was running for governor of New York.
Yeah,
he was going to do three things and then he was going to quit.
Larry Lessig as well. Larry Lessig said, the only way the only interest I have in winning the presidency and the only way we can change how campaigns work in this country is if I win. I can, with executive fiat, eliminate campaign, this campaign farce with funding, make all funding federal, and then resign to, I'll choose a very good vice president. That's why we'll watch with interest on Friday to see who is going to be the next president of the United States.
Oh, boy. But the other thing is that basically the two things were conflated, and this is why it's a complete mess they can't unpick, which is that... There is the issue of is there too much migration, and the issue of should we trade with Europe, and all this stuff was like tied up together. So a lot of the people who were voting for Leave were actually voting, I'm fed up with Westminster. I'm fed up with being you Southerners telling us what to do. Anything must be better than this. And, you know, the sort of the dog whistles about immigration and so on and the scare tactics that they put together, the thing is that there's no way to be part of the EU, to be able to trade with the EU without free movement of people. That's part one of the four things that you have to agree to actually get free trade.
So they've rejected free trade, in effect.
Well, no, they haven't. It's not clear. So
it's pretty clear that the EU is going to say, yeah, well, if you, that's about that. Enough of that. Yes. We're not going to make that deal. In fact, who was it? I think it was Ian Thompson from The Register, who was on Twitch shortly after Brexit, who said the EU is at great pains now because if Britain succeeds, that is sends a terrible message. So it must not succeed. They are not going to make a favorable deal with Britain because that would encourage others to exit the EU.
But the challenge is, we're in this constitutional gap. I mean, the other thing is that May just appointed Boris Johnson as foreign minister. And appointed another...
Oh, I didn't hear that.
David Davis as Minister for Brexit.
Oh, I didn't hear that. Boris Johnson as foreign minister?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
Now, was Theresa May pro-Brexit? Johnson, of course,
yes. Much, by the way.
I mean, I don't think she was for a stay, but not... And, that yeah, was
she,
to
she didn't
Cameron.
Make much noise about it. She was quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's the best that they could come up with, in other words. But meanwhile, Boris Johnson, who's absolutely pro-Brexit, is now foreign minister. Will he be doing the negotiation?
Goodness knows. They literally, nobody knew what was going to go on. They're still trying to work out what the implications are.
Wow.
The only clear thing is Article 50, which is once the British Prime Minister says, okay, we're officially leaving EU, then that starts a two-year clock, at which point the negotiations over what will happen next have to be concluded.
Fascinating.
But there's back and forth between do we try and negotiate before we trigger this, and the EU saying no, you don't get to do that, and Britain saying well, then we won't trigger it, and so there's like 16 kinds of brinkmanship going on, and then it's just like every day there's something even more surreal. We had Jean-Claude Juncker saying. Aliens from other planets don't want are worried about Brexit or something.
Mars has decided to leave the Federation.
He was speaking in French, but he definitely said "autre planète," and people watching us from afar. So it's like either he had too much wine or he was just.
Oh my God! There are people who really believe that that's going on.
There's that. Each day I read the news from the UK and I'm like, no, that didn't just happen, did it? What?
Yeah.
By the way, there is good news.
If you want to travel there, it's very cheap, yeah.
It's cheap to travel. The pound is weakening by the moment. And we now can use the British carrier 3, on our Project 5 phones.
Yes.
That's huge news.
And at a faster rate. Good news.
Yeah, we'll get at full rate. You pay it's not free as it is with T-Mobile, but unlike T-Mobile, they're not gating it. It's full LTE if that's available. Because you'll be paying the same $10 per gigabyte that you're paying in the U.S.
I've taken my 5 phone now for a number of international trips. All in all, has worked very well. And just I can now cancel that $100 a month thing I pay in
Me
case
too.
I use
Me
foreign
too.
Bandwidth on my AT&T phone.
Fi is now clearly the way to travel. And essentially what Google is doing by making these deals with carriers around the world, 15 countries... is making it all local because it's the same billing, the same process, the same cost, no matter which of those 15 countries you're in. So that's huge. How about calling? Is calling the same?
Calling's inexpensive. I forget what the deal is.
So there's no longer a speed cap as you travel.
I'll find out soon, Leo, because I did the entire Mexico City show.
You'll get your bill any minute.
On my Fi phone.
Oh, yeah. My God. Hey, seriously, send us the bill.
No, it'll be fine. It won't be much.
If it's big, send us the bill. If it's small, you can take care of it. But I don't want you to shoulder a big burden.
No. I wasn't saying it for that reason. I was just saying.
So
Fi
is available in 135 countries because they use T-Mobile and Sprint, which have global networks.
Right.
But you're using Fi,
T-Mobile was actually pretty good.
T-Mobile's great, but it's not full speed. That's the difference. No.
But it was. But you didn't actually pay for it, which was good.
Right.
Yeah. And they had some notional you can upgrade to faster, but it never actually worked.
Yeah, so I did it. I did it. You pay for more, and it wasn't very good.
Oh, you actually managed to get it. I couldn't actually, you know, I would say you could upgrade and I click a button and it would just sit there and look at me.
Oh, no,
and
then, I got it in Germany probably because it's Deutsche Telekom. I was able to do it in Germany and I think in maybe also in Austria. But it wasn't that fast and you paid money for it and it ran out very quickly because it was by byte, not by time. But this way, there's none of that stuff. You get as much speed as you can get on that carrier. Three's a pretty good carrier in the UK. What is that? It's two companies together, right? It's Deutsche Telekom and BT, or I can't remember what it is, but
it's not BT. BT,
anyway.
But Orange, no.
But they, I mean, the UK has always had a very easy swap the SIM in market. You can basically get them in any sweet shop and put a new SIM in and then recharge it over the counter there.
I've used Three before, and I was very happy. I had a MiFi card last time we were in London.
And they have little vending machines from the airport. Yeah. So it is straightforward to swap stuff there. But this does make it easier. And
well, it's huge. Yeah, it means if you are traveling, especially if you're traveling in those 15 countries, you must get a Nexus phone and get Fi service. Fi is no longer in Fi,
right?
And
the other advantage is my AT&T doesn't, because I'm on grandfathered unlimited, I can't do tethering, whereas with the Fi phone, I can tether.
Oh, nice. Yes. Again, you pay $10 per gigabyte, but that's not a lot.
Couldn't be more reasonable. Happy to pay it.
Tethering is a bit trickier, because once you tether, then wherever else you're on thinks it's on Wi-Fi, and it's like, wee, let's just drown that.
Yeah, let's download all these apps. Yeah, I know.
No, stop doing that.
There should be a setting that says I'm on a metered connection, even though you think it's Wi-Fi, it's metered.
But I think I complained about it when I was in Mexico City, but I went to a phone store. I complained of taking 4 hours, literally 4 hours. I tried to buy a MiFi, try to get it working. The speed was awful. I mean, and that is a solution country to country to country is untenable. Now, once Europe gets rid of roaming.
Well, ironically, will Britain be a part of that now? No, I guess not.
Oh, good point.
So that is a new EU rule that there should be no cost to roaming within the EU.
So my thought was I could buy a UK MiFi and use it all over Europe, but
I'm going to be doing.
That's still true. This is going to be true for at least 2 years.
I'm bringing my T-Mobile phone. We're going to Europe in September. I'm bringing my T-Mobile phone. Actually, we're going to the Baltic. So we'll see what happens here. So we're starting Paris, Sweden, St. Petersburg, Latvia, Riga, Latvia, Tallinn, Estonia. I'm going to try to get my international identity card in Tallinn while we're there. My Estonian digital citizenship. Great. Wouldn't that be fun? It has a PGP key on it. It's really an interesting idea.
Are you taking a cruise? I assume this.
Yeah. And then we're going to go to Bruges and Amsterdam, and then to Southampton. So I will try all of those countries as we. Just to
if
see.
It's Tuesday, it must be Bruges.
I like. You know what? The nice thing, if you're on a cruise ship, it's different. It's a different experience because you don't unpack. You unpack once, so it's almost as if you're in a hotel room and the country's come to you. So it's a very different experience than being on a tour where you're, constantly unpacking, moving around.
Do you do the official land activities or you go off on your own?
It varies. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. In this case, we're on a kind of high-end cruise line. We're on Regent Seven Seas. So they call them excursions are very nice. This is a PBS cruise, too. So there'll be PBS people.
Oh, how snotty of you.
I know.
So you get to watch in Bruges.
I know. The only reason I want to go to Bruges is because of that movie. I'm hoping there'll be no gangsters there at this juncture. That's a great movie, by the way.
It's a great movie.
And Bruges looks beautiful. It's a medieval town. So, I'm not going to Brussels. I have no interest in going to Brussels.
Believe me. And you do not want to go to that airport now.
Yeah. Well, this is the beauty of it. You fly to Stockholm, and then you're on a boat, which you never, unpack or pack. And then you get off and you're in Southampton and we have to go out of Heathrow, but that's all right.
In Stockholm, the Stullerhof restaurant.
Oh, good. I was looking for recommendations.
One of my favorites. One of my favorites.
Send me the link or the name.
Yeah, we'll do.
Because I don't understand Stockholm.
I sit there and just have, I love my herring.
See, I'm not a big fan. You're going to have to convince me on the herring.
Oh, but you have like five different flavors of herring? No, American canned
herring.
There's
only one. I'm sorry. There's only one flavor of herring. You can claim five.
No, lots of flavors.
There's the dill. Herring, the sour cream herring and the dill herring. Yeah. And that wonderful cheese and a beer. Oh.
What is it? S-T, how do you spell the restaurant?
S-T-U-R-E-H-O-F, Storehof.
Storehof. All right, I'll go there.
Well, but if you're going to the Baltic, you're going to be eating herring, you know, basically whichever place you stop.
I know. I'm not a fan, to be honest, of Scandinavian
food. You got to try it there. Try a little bit there.
All right.
Oh, but fish? Fish? Oh.
Not a fan.
Meatballs?
Meatballs I could, yeah, but I mean, I've had enough meatballs at IKEA that I'm not anxious to experience more meatballs.
Oh, I love Scandinavia. Oh, the little, the stand with the sandwiches.
Yeah, the smorgasbord.
I love Scandinavia. If I could move somewhere, I would move to Scandinavia.
Yeah, see this? I'm looking at this meal. Does not appeal. That, yeah.
They have they have things like steaks too.
Yeah. Well, I don't, you know. Now mostly I eat salads, so I'm sure they have lovely salad.
Oh.
Oh. You're one of those.
You're one of them.
What does Storehof mean? Something house.
It's on the, and the store is the name of the street.
Storehouse. Well, that's easy enough.
Maybe. Yeah. I'm guessing. I might.
Anyway, enough of my travels. So that's good news, though, and I will report back with the Google. I will bring my Fi phone. Now, I may have a new Fi phone, right, because we're Fi phone.
Ooh, let's hope.
I didn't realize it. I bet you that's why they named it Fi phone. Fi phone. Maybe the next Fi should be a fee.
Fee.
We hear there will be new Nexi in that time frame, right?
Sounds extremely plausible.
Because we're seeing already renders and... you know, leaks and stuff. Probably the new Snapdragon 821. Yeah,
it's hard to and I'd be a schmuck and I'll buy it like you do, but I'm so happy with my 6P.
The 6P is excellent. And by the way, even if you upgraded to Nougat, we have a name. Where'd the Nougat go? Did somebody eat all our Nougat? We had Nougat. from last night from All About Android. They have Nougat. They always have the candy of the. Of the week. But no, as of earlier today, I'm happy to report that Pokemon Go will work on Nougat. It didn't.
Oh.
It didn't, but it now will work on Nougat. They say maybe August. And we're seeing renders.
What do we think it's going to be?
We think it's made by HTC this time around. There's two phones, two different sizes. Sailfish and Marlin. Everybody seems to agree. All we've seen is renders. In fact, Android Police has a render, but based on description. The thing that was kind of interesting on these is this two-tone back. So there's glossy up top, probably a plastic for the camera, which is hidden behind that. I guess there's the camera. It's again, this is a render. This is just based on descriptions. Same fingerprint reader on the back. I suspect they'll be very similar. Faster processor. I'd like to see more RAM. I'd like to see better battery life, right?
Yeah. Well, something... I think Pokemon's doing death to my battery.
Oh, think? No. Although I'm using my daily driver now is the OnePlus 3. I love it. And, you know, obviously price is not for me a determining factor, but I'm getting fairly good battery life even with Pokemon Go running. It only maybe takes 40% of my charge in a 1 hour walk.
Yeah, do I have to actually kill it to stop doing that?
You should, because it kind of runs in the background. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going up to San Francisco this afternoon, so I don't actually want a dead phone by the time I get there.
Yeah.
Because it will refuse to let me do anything on the train, won't it? Because it's going too fast.
Where did the Nougat go, Karsten? Do you know? Where's the Nougat? Chris, can you find the Nougat? I want to show
you. Karsten is chewing right now.
I have no idea. It is like that, though.
You got rid of the evidence.
We got the Italian version, which is Torrone, which is really good.
That's nice. Yeah.
I grew up on that.
Where it is, but it was delicious.
We used to go down to the corner store in Providence, and for a quarter, you'd get the yellow box of Torrone. It was really good. And it's delicious. It's egg white and nuts and sometimes dried fruit, and it's quite delicious. I can't believe it's all gone. There were at least 10 pieces left when I got here this morning. Oh, well.
So somewhere in that office, there's somebody with a tail between the legs.
Yeah, somebody with crumbs down there. Anyway, it's Android Nougat, which is kind of what I was expecting, to be honest. I was being facetious with
that. It was a bit weird when they announced a contest for it, and then they like call it that anyway.
It was obvious. Okay. It was, you know, the only question was, would they go with a brand name if they would, obviously, Nutella. But I'm glad they went with something. And also, it's international, right? Nougat is an international treat.
Yes.
Which is smart. Originally French, I believe, although many countries in the European Union have their own version, Italy and Germany.
It's like fruitcakes.
Yeah, like fruitcake. It is kind of a fruitcake candy.
It's a fruitcake candy, yeah.
Marlin is the high end, the Nexus M1. It'll have the, of course, both of these will ship with the release version of Nougat. The Qualcomm 821, according to sources, 4 gigs, this is Android Police, 4 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of memory. That would be nice, at least, they say. Adreno 530 graphics, 12-megapixel camera, 8-megapixel front. Nexus phones, of course, have Type-C. Oh, I see a Nougat box coming. Is it an empty Nougat box? No, yay. That's not Nougat. This is Nougat. Somebody, for some reason, they have some big hunk, which I don't consider Nougat. This is the Nougat. This is, just for people who want to know, this is Ferrara, which is an Italian Nougat Torrone. And I'll just show you so you can speak authoritatively. Some people say, oh, you know, the nougat inside of a Mars bar or something. That's not nougat.
No.
That's not nougat. This is nougat, my friends.
What kind of nut?
I think it's almonds. Yeah. It's quite tasty.
This is the most ridiculous unboxing I've ever seen.
I should YouTube it. Nougat unboxing. I should totally do that. And do breathlessly keep them waiting for like 5 minutes. Well, okay, we have it here.
Show, as you just did, you're showing every angle of it. It's your habit. Yeah.
Let me read the material on the back. In Cremona, Italy, in 1441, at the wedding of Francesco Sforza to Bianca Maria Visconti, the buffet featured a suite made of nut meats, honey, and egg whites in the shape of the famous Tower of Cremona. Torrone, hence the name. Torrone from Ferrara since 1892. Anyway, I can't eat it, but I'll put it there for you to look at. This is kind of stale nougat. I don't know where we got this, but it's kind of stale. Do we cover the most important stories of the day or not? I ask you.
We surprise you.
All right, I'm going to eat.
So are you guys running on nougat, or are you still on?
I put nougat immediately on my 6P.
And I've got it on my 6P, my 6.
If it's not a daily driver, I wouldn't do it as a daily driver because there are a lot of apps that don't work with it. It seems fairly reliable.
Things just suddenly decide to quit again and again and again. You got to say, okay.
Yeah. But I do. I like it.
I love the notifications. I love the ability to operate within a notification. It's great. Yeah.
It's interesting because iOS is doing exactly the same thing in its next version, iOS 9 or 10.
Do you use the split screen at all?
Never.
No.
I think that's a tablet thing more than anything.
I barely remember it's there, and then after I've been copying and pasting back and forth.
Yeah.
But the double click to switch is quite good, but the split screen is.
I do like the double click to switch, and people don't necessarily see that. You have to force hold or long press the recents button. And,
double click to switch between the last two, and then long press, and you get to split screen.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't know about that until I saw them demo it on stage at Google.
Right.
Google I/O. So.
Yeah. So I don't think the next, to be honest, I think the 6P and 5X are fine. I don't think the next Nexus will be particularly different. So I would stick with what you got. There won't be, that's probably the one I'll be bringing to Europe. I can't, but you know, I guess I have to get the new one just to look at it.
Well, I mean, the only thing I'm wondering is if they do smarter things with more cameras, but that, which is, you know, predicted last year. But
and that's what Apple is apparently going to do with it. It's next.
Because, you know, the obvious thing is, you put a second camera here, and then you've got a stereoscopic camera.
Right.
Or you beef up the front and back cameras so you can actually do a 360 by moving it that way. Yeah, so a little bit of work like that, and suddenly you've got a thing that will let you gather the 3D stuff. Also, if you've actually got if you put a stereoscopic camera there, then once it's in the headset, the AR actually becomes stereoscopic, which is the difference.
Ooh, good point.
If anybody were to do a 360 camera on a phone, it would be Google, after all. I mean, they support this. They supported this with cardboard before anybody did.
Yeah. So, you know, I suspect part of it is that they want to push this forward. They announced the Carbo successor, which I've forgotten the name for, at I.O. For the VR stuff. Obviously, they want reference devices for that. And they'll be pushing that stuff. So, you know, and then, yeah, there is an obvious AR thing of strap your phone to your head and have the camera operating, which
is Daydream, right? That's what they're calling Daydream.
That was it. I couldn't remember the name of it. Yeah. But, and they've also got other like stuff that they've talked about, which is the AR based on Magic Leap. But the point is that if you think about, the natural extension of this, there are things in the world thing is you're wearing it over your head and you can see the things in the world. And as long as they're not like bigger than the thing you're trying to walk in front of, that makes some sense.
The Daydream is really a spec for others to adopt. It's so similar to Samsung's Gear VR. You have the Gear VR 360 cam, Jeff Jarvis.
Yes, I do.
Have you done anything with that yet?
I do. Play with us. So when I went to VidCon, I did the wrong thing. You're supposed to be very stable with it. I walked through the entire VidCon floor.
Makes people sick.
Yeah, but it was fun to do.
Did you post that somewhere? I can show it.
No, I haven't posted it yet.
Oh, okay.
Well, you can do that, but you need it. You need it on some kind of steady mount. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you can.
Judicious motion, please.
Yeah. Yes.
Right.
When Casey Neistat was at the Oscars, he just kind of walked with it as if he were carrying a chalice to the Pope, very carefully. But what's nice about it is that
you don't need to point it.
That's the thing that takes so long to get used to. I'm so used to pointing a camera at the subject. And eventually I finally got it with the Ricoh Theta S, which I love. You just hold it. Doesn't matter where you hold it.
Right.
Well, it does matter. No, it does matter for where the stitch is. So you don't want to hold it this way.
Can you see the stitch?
I'll be stitched. Oh, yeah, you can see the stitch.
Oh, well, that's not a good camera. Then that sucks.
You can see the stitch.
Well, no, close range.
Too, yeah.
The Ricoh, I don't see stitching at all.
Well, this is why you have the 16 camera rigs, but then, yeah.
Hold on a second here. So
they're a bit harder to carry.
Oh, you're doing it. Now, that's okay. So that's something cool. You could do that live. The Ricoh just recently added that feature.
That's one view.
That's kind of neat. The idea being that you could, somebody could be at home wearing their Gear VR, their Samsung virtual reality headset, and you could stream to them. And of course, at Samsung's event earlier this year, they showed, some friends in Paris carrying the camera and then their friend at home who couldn't go along for the ride. Don't move the camera, move the phone.
I know, I'm just...
Yeah, we can't move the phone because you'd have to move your hands.
I'm getting sick already.
The other thing that strikes me, back to the phones and back to Kevin's point, is that and I'll go back to the fabled, not yet arrived Mevo, shooting at 150 degrees. And what you can do with a wide shot like that in terms of cutting things up and editing afterwards and all kinds of neat things, I think that's where phone cameras go next is wider angle.
Yeah. But that's also part of this. I mean, the point of putting more lenses on there is that it gives you that more control. So you could put in, the trick there was it's a 4K lens, but then you can crop it to zoom effectively, right? That was the...
Yes.
This camera apparently, the ZTE Axon 7, which just went on pre-order today, which means I better pre-order it, is the first phone to support Daydream out of the box.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is from China's ZTE.
Uh-huh.
Front-facing camera. I mean, speakers, which I love, and I wish even HTC has abandoned that. 20-megapixel camera, 4K video. The key, though, in sporting Daydream is going to be the screen, isn't it? It's going to be, you need a 4K screen. You need enough resolution. And, of course,
This is a 4K screen.
Oh, yeah. And you need enough graphics. I guess the Adreno 530, which is in this, is sufficient.
Yeah, no, you need more GPU power for it, really, yeah.
Right, that's the key on it.
You see it, you put it into cardboard, and you're like,
This looks a lot, it's got the back of the box fingerprint scanner, which I think we've now come to agree is probably the best place to put that, right? My OnePlus 3 has it on the front. Dual SIM, which is the key, and up to 128 gig SD. The dual SIM is key for developing nations. India, for instance, has so many carriers that you might switch carriers going from town to town. So,
right. It seems another reason for Fi to get its biz dev together. Right. Yes.
I'll order one of these. I'm not seeing where the screen resolution is, but obviously it has to be 4K.
It'll be a 4K screen.
It has to be. You can't do it otherwise. That's one thing. That's one of the reasons this OnePlus 3 is a $400 phone, fully featured. You know, I mean, this is definitely a flagship phone in every respect, except 1080p screen. So you will never put this in a VR headset.
Okay. But that presumably means that helps the battery life.
Right. Great battery life. You know, 18-hour battery life. Really nice phone and $400. So for somebody who doesn't want to do VR, this is a really good choice. Fingerprint reader is on the front. I think Google really nailed it by putting it on the back there.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. Let me just see what the price is on the Axon 7. $400. So they're doing the same thing. They're doing the same thing. And you can get it in gold. I guess I'll get gold, right? Why not? Or quartz gray. You have to wait a little longer to get it in gold.
Oh, so that just reminded me. That was the other interesting Nougat feature is the screen size feature.
Wait a minute. New what?
Nougat? How do you say it?
Nougat. You're saying it Frenchy style.
Well, I come from a country that's fairly close to France.
You also say restaurant.
Well, it used to be.
Nougat. I have to start saying
nugget.
Nugget. It's nugget.
Nugget. Nougat. Wait, nougat. Anyway. But that was, I don't know if you remember this feature, but you can actually change the display zoom on your device, which means, which is great if you're actually old and have bad eyesight. And if you've got presbyopia, you need bigger text. And you can switch that in the OS now. So that's something that they did change here.
I love that.
But I want that, you know, that's the thing I want on the Nexus 7, because the Nexus 7 could do with being that little bit bigger visually. Some of the time. But it's neat. It works. And it's the one thing that changes the text size in Facebook, because Facebook ignores the system text size. So if you actually want to be able to read Facebook and you're short-sighted, you have to switch it the system over, because Facebook hates people with bad eyesight.
Don't we all? Don't we all? No, I'm the same way, exactly. All right, I'm going to pre-order this real quickly just to for completeness. I'm a completist. So continue talking. Don't...
Oh, sorry.
Don't shut up.
We were
I'm pushing buttons and entering credit card numbers, if you don't mind, right now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Well, I just saw that this is just
went on. Do you tend to buy more on the air or off the air?
No, it's all the same to me. No, I just saw that it went public sale right now. So it's like Pokemon. You got to get them while you can. Let me use Amazon payments. That'll save some time. There you go. Cool. I said, you know what? That's interesting. That's a good price.
What is it again?
$400. I wonder if that's going to be the new.
That's a good price.
Yeah. I wonder if that's going to be.
That's the one new thing that Google could do. They did it before. Remember, is they have a bunch lower price on the phone.
Yeah.
They could go back to that.
Oh, that would be nice.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
No, but yeah, between the Motorola ones and the Nexuses, that was a very good run of good prices, yeah.
Well, and really it was a case of thinking of the phone as a developer phone, not as a end user phone. Would you say the 6P and 5X really are more aimed at the end user than the developer?
I don't know. I haven't been shopping in the shops and seen where they sell them. But certainly the Nexus line, they sell in, you know, they sell in mainstream.
Well, and one of the changes is Google Fi, because you have to have a Nexus phone to use Google Fi. And so I would guess that, in fact, that's the way you get Google Fi, is buying a Nexus phone or buying Fi and then you get a Nexus phone. I would guess that that's really changed the equation a little bit. It's not a developer phone because now Google's in the phone business. What about Project Tango? Should the new phones be Project Tango enabled? Tango seems to me such a specialized
thing. I think it is. It's powerful.
Yeah.
And I've long said people with blindness and things like that, it'll be phenomenal to map inside spaces. And and find you lost things and do all kinds of great things. But I think it's not going to be a consumer product for a long time.
Google, remember, has wanted to build the Biodome Space Campus and has been thwarted time and time again. Well, it may be a reality now. They just made a land swap with LinkedIn. I guess now that LinkedIn is a Microsoft company, they're all moving to Redmond anyway. I don't know.
Well, LinkedIn is building a new property down there.
In Mountain View.
In Mountain View. But they moved their office here to San Francisco. So they did annex a big chunk of land there near the old office, and then they've taken over as San Francisco. So.
Silicon Valley Business Journal with the scoop, they say that a few million square feet of real estate with a property swap will become Google's, and that this will be sufficient to build the master plan.
Well, isn't part of it is getting stuff that's zoned differently?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought that they had been turned down by Mountain View.
Yeah.
Google?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's a whole big thing. This allows them to consolidate services. LinkedIn, I think, has like a shopping center and restaurants. I mean, it's all kinds of things they had.
Yeah, you're right. LinkedIn plans for a new office plus retail promenade in Mountain View. Now, maybe because some of this property is in Sunnyvale now, not just Mountain View, some of the LinkedIn property, maybe that's somehow part of the...
They were each able to consolidate. Then I think there's transit things they need to do.
Yeah.
I still get... I keep on thinking about it. The housing situation throughout that area is awful. And there ought to be high-rises going in by the train lines, damn it.
LinkedIn had prior approval from the city council, because that's where they were going to put their shoreline for 1.4 million square feet of office space. So presumably that, at least this Business Journal says, that those approvals will transfer to Google as well.
I wonder how that deal happened. Who sat down with whom?
Can you imagine the negotiation? LinkedIn acquires ownership of...
I vision a monopoly board, and they say, okay, I'll trade you.
Yeah, kind of like that, right? All right, I will give
you... Don't say the word monopoly around those kinds of things.
I will give you 700 East Middlefield Road for a property on the old Gold's Gym. I'm going to need more than that. All right, I'll give you 800 East Middlefield as well. But then I would also like to get the property at 1431 Plymouth. Was there cash? No. It was a straight-up trade.
Really?
They also get the pub, apparently.
The pub?
The sports page. There's one pub south of 101.
Sports page. They call it the Sports Page property. That's the old Gold's Gym. It's a dive bar.
Yep. But it's the only pub that side of the freeway. So it's where you go to drink with people to not be on Google premises.
Well, guess what?
Google's just bought it. So, whoops.
Guess what? Google now owns all of Mountain View. Congratulations, Google.
Oh, no. All of Mountain View south of 101, I think.
Yeah. So I'm not joking. It's all of Mountain View south of 101.
West of 101.
West of 101.
West of 101.
And then east of 101 is going to be the other side of the tracks.
Which am I looking?
Wow.
No, east of 101. Basically, bay side of 101. It's just like 101 is kind of diagonal.
Apparently, and this I would be interested in, Google's working on new Android Wear watches. They've never made their own Android Wear watch. According to Android Place, these watches would come out at the same time as the new Nexi. But not sure what features. Angelfish and Swordfish are the codes. But one, the speculation is it will be very voice assistant.
So I was ready to give up on my Android Wear. This one is dying every day about 6 o'clock. It just dies. Battery's not out. Plus, they won't give it the update, which I think is fairly awful. So I was thinking, okay, maybe I
wear the LG a lot. I like the LG a lot, but it's clunky as hell.
I wore the LG every day until I got all my stuff stolen on the train and lost the charger for it. So.
Oh, no.
I hate proprietary chargers.
That's what you get for taking public transit. Be a Californian and take a car. But I'm sorry, Kevin. I actually don't mean to be making fun. Yeah. That sucks.
There'll be two
I'll
sizes.
I'll show you the photograph of my bike having a bit stolen from it, too. That was
These are renders, we should say. This is another. Okay. This is what Android Police does. They take the rumor and
I love
do
it.
A render.
Exclusive. We're making up something.
Yeah. Well, they've got the picture is not the key. It's the prose that goes along with it.
So they are going to be round and not square.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is good. I like round. I'm not crazy about the flat tire. This doesn't look like
tire.
It has
they
a flat
can surely
tire.
Surely get rid of the flat tire.
Yeah. With Rick Osterloh now in charge of hardware at Alphabet, or at Google. Is it at Google or at Alphabet? It's Google, isn't it? I think it is. Because it's Alphabet. They still have Nest, and he's not in charge of Nest. So I think it must be Google. And I think these are coming out of Google. I would expect to see some good stuff. Of course, he did the Moto 360. He was when he was at Motorola. Let's take a quick break. We're talking about anything we damn well want. But you know what? That's what I love doing with this panel, because Jeff and Kevin are the greatest. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage, which is if you are not Google size, if you're not making Monopoly deals for your next house, you maybe need a mortgage. Yeah. But remember the last time you got a mortgage? I remember it 3 years ago. It was all delayed. It took forever. We had to give them so much paperwork and then more paperwork. I think since the banking crisis, it's gotten worse. And just piles, tons of paper. And then we had booked a cruise. So Lisa and I leave on the cruise. And her poor sister, who works in our office here, had to do a lot of it. And she couldn't just sign her name. She had to sign her name. I feel so bad for her. I can't remember the phrase, but in place of Lisa Laporte, it was crazy. It was crazy. Well, now there's Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, and it's easy. It's kind of, I love the slogan, push button, get mortgage. It's, for one thing, completely online. So no more paperwork. You share your bank statements and pay stubs with the touch of a button. You can get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution tailored to your unique financial situation. Look at this. This couldn't be easier. And you don't even have to do it on a computer. You could do it on your phone or your tablet from the couch. Couldn't be quicker. Couldn't be easier. And by the way, because computers, you're going to get a custom solution tailored to your needs. This is the way. Quicken Loans, of course, you know Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is designed by Quicken Loans to be fast, easy, powerful. And right now you can do it at quickenloans.com/twig. Please do go to quickenloans.com/twig. That way we get credit for it. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Go to quickenloans.com/twig right now. Thank you for bringing us into the 21st century. Kevin Marks is here from the Indie Web. You know what? You guys, I feel like you're making progress.
I think we're making progress.
The idea of a free and open web that is not burdened by proprietary standards, I feel like you're making progress. Microsoft, for instance, I'll give you an example. Microsoft just announced that they're going to do Skype for Linux. They're updating it, and it's going to use WebRTC.
There we go.
Standard. Now, one of the reasons we use Skype is because their proprietary codec, Silk, does such a good job. We could use WebRTC. That's basically Google Hangouts.
Silk's the audio codec, right?
Silk is proprietary. It's their codec.
Yeah, but the voice codec that's in WebRTC is based on a lot of the Silk
stuff. Bricks, isn't it? Or something like
Bricks,
that.
Bricks, yeah. I can't remember. I can't think of the exact
name. Crazy with Bricks. We've sampled them all. You know what? It's fine. WebRTC is perfect for what most people use these for, which is conversations, video and audio conversations.
Yeah.
We have a somewhat more challenging standard because we're trying to get broadcast quality video out of it.
Oh, no. I have to quit everything else because I'm using the older, slower Mac now. I have to quit everything else and run just Skype on this machine.
But people come to us and say, I was just watching Skype on CNN. How do your guys look so much better? How do you do that? And, it's over years of messing with it. Yeah. But I worry because if they go all WebRTC, I'm torn because on the one hand, web standards, I like it, open standards.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it doesn't work quite as well as the proprietary codec.
But you can probably work on tuning that as well.
Maybe we'll get better at it. Yes, maybe. Yeah.
Have you seen... I'm going to have to look up the name before I recommend it. Is it Anycast? Oh, it's Tricast. That's it. TRYCA.ST.
No.
So this is an interesting tool. It's a tool for podcasters, audio podcasters. So not quite
it's
your
confusing because of the TriCaster.
Yes. Well, the thing's called Cast, but they've got a clever URL.
Right.
But what's neat about it is it uses WebRTC in the browser, but it records both sides locally and then uploads them to their server.
Oh, that's very smart.
So it lets you do the record both ends thing without having to futz around on your own machine, which means you get clean audio from both sides. And then they have an in-browser editor you can use, or you can just download the tracks and edit them yourself in GarageBand or whatever you want to use. So, but it's a very neat application of using the WebRTC thing. And having used it a couple of times, it works surprisingly well. You make a connection and you start talking to people and you realize, oh, that's remarkably low latency and it works very well. And then at the end of it, you've got ISO'd files from each speaker. So it's a...
What was that I was URL with that. Again?
TRYCA.ST. And it's like there's a you can try it free for a month, and then there's a $10 a month, $30 a month, depending on how much you use it.
Oh,
and they'll host your podcast for you as well if you're paying them. But it's I've tried it out a couple of times, and if I was going to do an audio podcast again, that's what I'd be using, because I was really impressed with how straightforward it was. The usual thing of I want to record both ends. If you're actually serious about audio quality, you want to do that. And that involves so much encouraging people to set things up and fiddling around and specialized tools and stuff. And this just was like, oh, click, click, click. Ooh, that just worked.
We tried it once. I think I tried a double ender at the very beginning of my career. It was such a pain in the ass. I never did it again. Steve Gibson teased me because he felt my pain. He was going to write, and it's not so hard to do. He was going to write because the codecs, the Brix codec and stuff like that, you could just plug it in.
Yeah.
We had a very clever idea, because part of the problem is you want the conversation in real time. So he was going to have a ring a local ring buffer that would fill with local content while you did the conversation. So filling in any dropped packets or out of order packets and getting a full quality. And then when the recording was over, it would just send the other end up. But you'd be in sync because you were doing it in real time and not worrying so much about what the real time sounded like. I imagine they're doing something similar to that.
Yeah, they're effectively doing. They're recording it locally, but at each end, and then they're syncing it afterwards.
Yeah.
which is very very smart. Yeah. So basically, buffering it to local storage, transmitting it as well. So it's I'm impressed. The impressive part, they've done it in the browser. I mean, you used to be able to do this with iChat and GarageBand a long time ago.
Yeah, remember
and
that.
You had to launch them both at the same time and press record, and it would record the conversation. And that was very neat, but it was hard to explain to people what you had to do to do it.
This is really cool.
But it's a neat thing.
If you're a podcaster, it's so much easier. It kind of makes me mad. So much easier now to do it, but it's like everything else, right?
Well, that's the point. But it's something easier. Going back to the indie web point and WebRTC, one of the things that I mentioned, but I think. I don't know if I mentioned this last time I was on the show or not, was the Decentralized Web Summit, which was an event organized at the Internet Archive, it was almost a month ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago, trying to get a lot of the people working on these different bits and pieces of things that are making the web work in a more P2P way together and having a conversation together. Yeah, June the 8th, so it is more than a month ago. And I wrote a thing on it with Dan Gilmore that's we can link to in the thing. But
You had Cory Doctorow as the keynote. How nice is that?
Oh, we had Tim Berners-Lee. We had Vint Cerf, Mitchell Baker.
Amazing event.
What?
Yeah, it's if you got a bit of time, go back and watch the videos. It was interesting stuff.
Rooster Kale winding things up. That's great.
And I'm in there somewhere.
Look at this.
So I did a panel with the P2P guys.
Yeah.
There we go. That's me in the middle. But the interesting thing was a lot of them were doing some of this clever stuff with the WebRTC, and some of these affordances that have been put in the browser to use them to do other things, to do edge-to-edge communication without having to go through the client-server model. So that was definitely interesting. So there's me hand waving. Yep. So being able to do using it to download videos through BitTorrent entirely in JavaScript, and also as they play in the browser, be sharing packets upstream to other people who are watching the same stream, which is you can now do without downloading any plugins or anything, which was fascinating. So there's a chunk of bits and pieces, ways of people repurposing these web technologies in lots of different ways, and also. The other big thing that I got from that was there are a lot of different people doing content addressable storage, where you look up things by a hash of the data rather than the data itself, or an address.
Interesting.
And at the moment, they all tend to have slightly different hashes and models. So one of the things that struck me was that there's scope for us to converge some of these. So you won't care
where the object lives.
Yes.
But because you'll have a kind of canonical URL that's deducible from the content itself.
Right. And so, and also it means you can check you've got the right version once you get the
Nice.
So there's a bunch of bits and pieces, you know.
Is it decentralized storage? Is it kind of a peer-to-peer network or?
Yes, there's several different ones. There's IPFS, ZeroNet. There's several like
That's a great idea.
A lot of people built these out. But the challenge is always you have to be part of one of those systems to do it. Right. But if we can actually unify them through converging the content hashes, then that's a powerful thing. Because suddenly you'd be able to say, I need to get this thing. I could go to the original source for it, or I could get it from this local server that's, you know, local to me, so I don't have to traverse the net for it. So if it could be on a local network, it could be an offline thing that has a bunch of stuff on it and so on. But you can check it's the same thing because you can hash it. So there's a bunch of really interesting bits around the edge of that that I got from that's fascinating. And then there's, you know, plus there's the rest of the indie web stuff where we're already excited about this. But it was one of those places where I was like, okay, I've been rolling my eyes at Bitcoin a bit for a few years. And there was still a lot of, you know, some of that stuff going on, but there's also a bunch of other applications of these kinds of cryptographic primitives, some of the browser standards like WebRTC and progressive web apps and lots of these other bits and pieces that are being worked into the platform that suddenly gave me a lot of confidence that the web has sort of a lot of headroom for doing more new things.
Nice. I'm glad to see it.
So the article I wrote with, I think it's in the thing, with Dan Gilmore is, where's that one gone? A Fast Company. That's a sort of good starting point with some links. But the archive, the site itself,
how to break open the web.
The site itself has the videos and stuff from the event, and I think there'll be more versions, iterations of this in future. Because it was one of those events where you're like, oh, wow, there's a lot of people working on things like. You meet a bunch of people who are working on a bunch of different things, and you start seeing patterns in them and saying there's a lot of commonality here. And some of that is because you started from the same point, but some of it is you started from different points of converging, and that's when it gets interesting.
I love this illustration Sandra Shun did, network structures. The old centralized network, of course, the pre-internet days of networking where you had a hub and spokes. The decentralized network, which is really a network of networks, a.k.a. the internet. And then this new model, which, I mean, you could argue that's kind of what the internet is too, the distributed network.
Right, but the point is, and there's always...
Everything's a peer in the distributed network.
Right. It's like, are you rooting through, are you rooting up and down a tree, or are you rooting side to side?
Right.
And in the internet, you know, we are generally rooting up and down a tree a lot of the time. The point of the content hashing stuff is that it is independent of routing. It doesn't matter how you get that.
Right.
And you know, we've had this BitTorrent in effect does this. You pass around a hash of the BitTorrent structure. That gets you the torrents. That gets a list of servers, and then you can bootstrap the whole process from that. Let me find the. Go to WebTorrent.io. Have a look at this.
WebTorrent.io, is that it?
Yeah, WebTorrent.io. Look at that on your computer where it's...
I shall. Okay. Introducing WebTorrent Desktop. So okay. This is this JavaScript BitTorrent client you were talking about.
Yes. So if you watch, scroll up a bit, there's a video at the top.
Up. You know, that means different things depending on your... scroll up, yes.
So that video that's playing there, that is being downloaded by BitTorrent.
In very high speed,
in the
might
browser,
add.
In high quality. You can see the network, this topology on the left.
Wow.
And also you are...
This is super cool.
Uploading bits to other people as well.
So I'm downloading it from 8 peers. Do you still have a seeding a peer?
Yes.
Yeah. So somebody seeds it.
Somebody's seeding it, but other people. But the point is, you are actually helping seed it by playing it. And the other subtle thing that Feroz has done with this is because he's in control of which order you load the bits, he's loading them in the order you want to play them in. So he's using the BitTorrent. Normally with the BitTorrent model, you have a file broken up into chunks.
It's assembled kind of a random order, and it's not usable till fully assembled. Yeah, but with streaming, you would love to assemble it in order, or at least close to order.
See more peering as the audience signs on. Look.
Yeah. Look at this. Oh, that's the peering. Oh, my God. This is fascinating. And this is all done in the web.
It's done in the browser, yeah.
What I meant. In the browser, all with JavaScript. Yep. That's incredible.
This is pretty cool. But basically, he does this by gluing together things we already had, which is the BitTorrent protocol, JavaScript, and the ability to move video around. But also, he's using WebRTC to do the edge-to-edge communication, because you can do that with WebRTC.
So can I just use it now? I mean, how do I use this? There is a desktop client for OS X, Windows, and Linux.
And you can embed any torrent into a web page. He explains how to do it somewhere on the page.
Wow.
This changes the distribution equation for even the stuff we do.
Right.
Dramatically. You wouldn't do live streaming with this.
This isn't for live stream. This is because this is stored.
Somebody would have to see the entire file.
Yes. So you could do this for your archive. But they've hooked up the Internet Archive already had a BitTorrent mirror of the video they store, and they've hooked that up to this. So that you can just stream those in the browser now as well.
So where it would really be of interest, right now Google has really a monopoly, as close to a monopoly as you can get with YouTube. And it's obviously centralized, and only Google is big enough to kind of host that volume of traffic. But you could do a decentralized YouTube using this.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, you still need someone to seed it, but the point is that you could cope with ramp-ups as more people
Well, it would be great for us, for instance. Right now, if you download a file of any of our shows, if you're not watching live, you're getting it from CacheFly, and they shoulder the burden of all the bandwidth. Now, they're a CDN, so you get great download speeds and everything. So from the end user's point of view, there'd be no difference or no advantage. But from our point of view and CacheFly's point of view, there'd be a huge advantage. Because the burden of bandwidth would be shouldered by all the users,
but then the challenge, the difficulty there is you are using, as I said, then you, when Jeff's on his Tether thing, it suddenly finds his uploads to other people as well. So there's a trade off there.
Yeah. When we first started doing the shows, we distributed via BitTorrent. I liked that because the model was great. We said to people, if you get the show and you want to be a seeder, please do. It will really help us distribute it. And people were great. And I love that community feeling of everybody was helping out and everybody was participating. And as a viewer, but you're right. Now with bandwidth caps and metered bandwidth, it's really.
But the thing is, it actually got harder to do that precisely. Well, somebody said in the chat, your ISP will throttle you. Yeah. The ISPs did start to throttle it. But that was partly because, to some extent, BitTorrent was like an arbitrage around asymmetry, because it would let you. Like the cable networks were designed to download faster than they uploaded, but if you made multiple connections, you could end up uploading more as well.
Right.
So, but the problem is the way it initially did it caused a lot of contention and stream dropping. There was actually a lot of thrashing going on because it was opening lots of TCP streams. So they invented the MuTP protocol, which actually is much more efficient than that, and the amount of bandwidth used. Dropped a lot because it doesn't waste bandwidth, and also it doesn't push the rest of the network out of the way. It basically backs off in front of TCP streams.
So, Kevin, being a Chromebook user, why can't this just operate on the web? Since the demo does, why do I need a desktop at all?
It can operate on the web. Yeah.
You don't. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the point.
So you
no, but I don't have a client
from a Chromebook. No, you don't need a client.
Well, I am. I'm seeding right now. What I'm saying is if I wanted to look up a torrent and
Yes. I mean, basically, you can embed a torrent in the page. There's it'll tell you how to do it. You can look up a torrent, and then they could embed it in the page with JavaScript using this library.
But I'm just saying they should make this basically a service. Search on the torrent and play it through a web client.
I'm sure someone will. I mean, at the moment, it's a technology thing. I mean, they've done it for the Internet Archive. Somebody could do that. I think there's some constraints on which codecs it can use. So you'd have to pick the right, because it has to be a codec that's supported by the browser, whereas a lot of the torrents will have a variety of different codecs. So it has to be in the subset that is part of the common browser codec things. But so is it basically MP4?
It looks like set. It caches it too. So since I've downloaded it already,
it comes
from me. I'm playing it, and now others are joining to download it from. Yes. From me.
Yeah, I think it uses local storage as to cache in. I haven't actually all down the whole stack, but
yeah, it does. I just went forward a page and back, and it's re-downloading it now.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the difference on a Chromebook, I guess, because here I am on a desktop, a Linux desktop, and it saved it. So this is great. I love this idea. And I'd love to see a front end that is browser only, obviously. So
and the more that BitTorrent is legitimized, the less that it'll be demonized.
I would, God, by now, don't people know that BitTorrent's used for so many legitimate purposes?
It is, but it's still, I think
the bulk of piracy is BitTorrent, right?
It is less blocked than it was. I mean, the part of that was that they said this protocol change that they came up with that meant that it was actually causing network problems. It doesn't do that anymore. It backs out of the way of other streams. It doesn't overload the pipes.
BitTorrent's going to cover the Republican convention next week with BitTorrent Live TV. They have a news network. We're on BitTorrent Live TV. We're one of the first networks on it, so you could watch us.
I can watch it through that.
Yeah, you could watch us on Apple TV. What's that?
Bram was at the...
Bram Cohen, the creator of BitTorrent.
He was there, too. Yeah. And I think he was talking to Feroz about this, but I'm not sure they've made the live thing work.
I think for Bram, it really is all about legitimizing his baby. I mean, he really doesn't like it important. That it's seen as a piracy tool. I mean, that's...
No, I mean, he cares about the protocol and that it makes sense and it works. And it does.
It's a really good protocol. If you go right now to webtorrent.io, you will see how quickly and easily this downloads.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And it really is kind of remarkable.
And the beauty is because of just for the UI for this demo, but showing you how you're helping others and seeding.
I love that.
It's kind of great. Yeah.
I really love seeing that. And you know what that does? That eliminates the piracy claim because you see every IP address that's seeing this, right? So, I guess somebody could use Tor and obfuscate their address. But it's pretty hard on BitTorrent to be anonymous. It actually turns out to be a really crappy way to pirate stuff. despite its success.
Well, it's the same way that Bitcoin is actually a bad way to buy illegal things.
Right, right.
It's like, wait, that wasn't the goal of this protocol at all.
Not at all. What happened? Bitcoin halved
over the weekend.
Wow. That means it takes twice as much power to generate the same amount of Bitcoin if you're a miner. Does it solve the ledger problem? The ledger was running out of room.
No, doesn't do it. Doesn't touch that.
And they still haven't, as a group, haven't solved that. I presume the forks of Bitcoin are ongoing, and
that's still ongoing. They're still debating that back and forth. I haven't actually looked at the ratios of the different versions yet.
But price has stabilized, which often to me is a good indicator that things are getting better, or at least not getting worse.
That was my depressing headline of the week. Bitcoin now less volatile than UK pound.
Oh my God, that's such bad news.
It's like, yep.
Oh, that's bad news. Jeez.
And obviously, it depends on the window you choose, but yeah, basically, the pound's had a bad few weeks.
My God.
But the halving does is it adjusts the balance between what you make by mining and what you make by fees, which does adjust the utility of the Bitcoin protocol to some extent.
And it's automatic, by the way. We should point out that nobody does this. The Bitcoin Foundation doesn't do it. It's part of the protocol. It's automatic, which is so cool.
Well, it happens every whatever it is.
Yeah.
5,000 days or something.
Yeah.
But the point is that, it's some number of blocks, isn't it? But the block rate is approximately every 10 minutes.
We don't know, and we will never know, I'm pretty convinced, who Satoshi Nakamoto is or how many, whatever. But pretty freaking brilliant. He missed a few things, but, you know.
Well, there's this weirdness. It's like things could change. You know, enough miners, the miners could have ganged up and decided they didn't right. want to halve.
Right.
And they'd have had to do a fork and do that thing. But it, what it means is that this is predictable. They know it's going to happen. They can plan for it.
There's no protection against forking no matter what you do.
Well, that's the protection against forking is one of you has to win or you end up with be able to double spend.
Right.
And so at the point where there's a fork going on, there is some dissension about what counts as truth, and you're picking a branch every time you send a transaction in. But the sort of the point of the halving is because the number of bitcoins you get per block went from 25 to 12.5, that means the fee income is more significant. So when you're trying to put bitcoins on the transaction queue, you're able to say, I will pay so much to the miner for this transaction being put into the block. And they will obviously rank them by how much they make from it and put those ones in the earlier block rather than the later block, which means that ratio is now more significant, especially as the block size hasn't grown, which means the amount of fees you have to put in will creep up because of this, as the scarcity of space in the block is the same. So to some extent, the miners now have an incentive not to grow the size of blocks. But it also means
which is that, bad news because that's part of the problem.
It depends on what you think Bitcoin is for. It means that using Bitcoin for very small transactions makes even less sense than it did before, because you would have to put more fee value into it, and also because the block size is limited, you fill it up with small transactions, then the value of the potential fee value is lower. So it's causing sort of Bitcoin to migrate towards large transactions in effect.
Samsung Galaxy Note 7 coming August 2nd, we think. We got the invitation yesterday to Samsung's event in New York City. I'm going to forward it to you, Jeff.
Yes, please do. I'll try to go.
But I will not be in town. I'm going to San Diego that day to see a play.
Aren't you just Mr. Culture? Or what is it? Is it a dramatization of Taco Bell commercials or something?
It's Steve Martin's new comedy.
Oh, my.
And Jenna Fischer is in it from Office.
Oh, love her.
I know. You know, it's a great premise. I don't think it's a musical. I think it's called Meteor Shower. The premise is two couples go to their backyard, one of the couple's backyard, to watch a meteor shower. It's like a drawing room comedy in the backyard. At least that's my understanding. It's a great cast, just four people. I can't wait to see it. Anyway, that's why I will not be here, but we will have coverage.
Wait. It's like a rabbi, a priest, and an elephant walk into a bar, and you stop there. So four people go.
I don't know what else happens. I haven't seen it yet.
And then what?
Well, dialogue ensues.
It seems so obvious. Well, it'll be great. You're watching a meteor shower. Of course, a brilliant movie.
You heard of a play called Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
It's Steve Martin. That's all I need to know.
It's
I know.
Steve Martin writing it. Think of it as a comedic Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. it should be fun. Anyway, Samsung has skipped the Note 6 because, of course, they have the Galaxy S7. They want everything to be in sync. We don't know anything about the S7. Except that it will be the Note 7, I should say, a successor to one of the most successful phones, despite all odds, of all time. This Galaxy Note was the giant phone. You know, it was the first 5-inch plus
laughed.
Phone.
Everybody
laughed when
laughed.
I put my Note to my head, and they said, "What the hell is that? You got a giant Hershey bar? What is that?" Now
I never understood that criticism because
I know.
The distance between my ear and my mouth is, more than this.
It fits.
Even.
It fits. Right? Yeah.
You know, the classic handset is bigger than even the...
Well, everybody realized that. We need a big screen. We want a big screen. And the stylus, I think, for not everybody, definitely for some markets, is awesome. Take notes. You could draw pictures. They're going to do the Edge style, which has been so successful for them. I have mixed feelings. Aesthetically, the Edge is incredible. I mean, it's just beautiful. It's like an infinity pool. But it's a little hard to hold, and sometimes you get stray inputs from your fingers. The rumor, of course, 5.7-inch screen, Edge style. Same 12-megapixel camera as the Galaxy S7. Water-resistant. Again, they're back to that. Perhaps a massive 4,000 milliamp-hour battery, which, you know, you never know if that's going to be enough given the size of the screen and the number of pixels it'll be pushing. It, the other rumor that I find interesting is an iris scanner. I don't know if that's a good idea.
So the FBI can get it from you. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, you know, do you really want to unlock your phone like by holding it to your eyeball? I don't. And, you know, there are. I think Windows phones use this, and it's very annoying. It says up, down, no, a little closer. No, a little far. Okay. Don't move. No.
Wait, the paperclip will tell you how to do it.
Yeah, no, that's not. You don't want that. So, and by the way, fingerprint works so well. I don't see a reason for it. That looks, you know, we don't know. We'll find out, and we'll be covering it August 2nd. That's just around the corner, a couple of weeks from now. Galaxy Note 7 Unpacked, 7 Unpacked 2016. August 2nd, our live coverage, 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern.
Put my calendar right now.
Put that in your calendar, and I'll make sure you get an invite, because we'd love to hear from you what you think of it and all that.
If they'll fly me there, I'll take an invite.
I don't think airfare was included. I think Jeff and I both got an invitation to Huawei's big event in Shanghai.
Yep.
Next month.
Yep.
Oh, that sounds like fun. Send me to that.
Well, you know, I've been looking at it, Jeff, and it looks more, you know, at first we thought, well, what is it, a junket for Huawei? But now it looks more like Dreamforce, you know, Salesforce has done really well with a conference around the Salesforce technologies.
It's huge.
It's huge. And I think Huawei is attempting to do the same thing. And they told us, we're trying to get people outside of Huawei. Somebody's playing Pokemon Go.
My son's asked me how many what Pokemons I've got.
Your son will peer pressure you into that. You know, now that you've done it, everybody else has to launch their Pokemon Go just to see if anything else
has shown up. You were trying to get somebody from outside? What?
Huh? They're trying to get. They have Intel's CEO, Greg. I can't ever pronounce his name. Will be there, and I think they're trying to get others from other companies, so to make it more of a conference. So, can you stop that, or at least turn the sound down, so I don't know you're playing because it's making me a little antsy.
Let me find the sound settings. There we go.
Okay. No, I don't know.
He's not going to stop playing. He's just turning the sound.
No, yeah, that's fine. I can understand why you would never stop playing. Apparently, you'll be able to share Google Play apps, movies, and music soon from Google Play with up to 6 people.
I spend a fortune buying shows on Google Play.
So this is the Google Play Family Library Plan. Now, there is already a family subscription for music. So is this just extending that to TV apps and music?
You end up paying more, or?
Well, I think so. Oh. You certainly do for the music family plan, which is $15 for,
that's
I think, for five. Yeah, $15 for five
This
people.
Is a case where I've already bought the show. Can I share it with up to 6 people?
According to CNET, the primary account holder will be able to remove specific titles from the family library or hide certain artists you want others to know you enjoy. We don't know, I guess. This is not yet out. Everyone in the group will be able to access every single app, video, and book that's available to the account holder. So as dad, you're the account holder.
I am indeed.
You can
To be the breadwinner, now I'm the account holder.
Yeah. You don't have to pay extra to sign up for the Google Play Family Library. Ooh. But you will have to have a credit card saved to the account for future purchases. But you probably do, right?
Believe me, that's there.
Yeah.
I mean, I do things like Mr. Robot. I'll just go ahead and buy it on Play so I can watch it when I want to and not have to. Because the problem is I want to watch it on a train or a plane. I'm not online.
Right.
So I'll buy it. Stupid.
Yeah. I don't think that's stupid. That's good. So let's support shows and show people there's a business in not just putting it on cable. I think that's really important.
I certainly use the family plan for Google Music. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I pay for it.
And, you know, I suppose I implicitly do that with Amazon in that we've got Kindles that are on the same account and we can read each other's books. But
yeah, and, you know, we have a sponsored texture that's like Netflix for magazines, and they encourage you to. They said you can have five devices, you can share it with your family. They actually encourage it.
But wasn't there a legal decision this week that messed this up?
Yeah, maybe.
May mess this up.
It potentially makes it a felony to share your,
to share your password.
Share your password. I don't. You know, we talked about this yesterday with Steve on Security Now, and it really was. So Snopes says it hasn't become a felony. It was a court decision. Most people, like the LA Times, are saying, relax, you're not going to jail for sharing your Netflix password. It was a appellate court ruling that, so this guy, David Nassal, worked as a regional director at an executive search firm, Korn Ferry. Left the firm, started his own competing business. He had someone else use the login information of his former assistant, who was still at Korn Ferry, to download proprietary information from the company's database. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals say that David did knowingly steal trade secrets by accessing a protected computer without authorization. That's a violation of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act and the Economic Espionage Act. Some have projected that, oh, that means you can now prosecute password sharing as a Computer Fraud and Abuse Act violation. I don't think
that. Okay, that's a different kind of intent.
I think that's really stretching it. Maybe somebody will try it, but you know, it's always up to the court to decide whether that's the case, and I don't think any court would reasonably.
But also, if Amazon did that for Kindle users, then they just use a lot of Kindle users.
Dumb. Nobody's going to prosecute that.
They already know that we're reading the same books on multiple devices over different times, and they're clearly happy with it as we're buying books that way.
Yeah, so don't worry. Go ahead. Here's a story that I think is kind of interesting. PewDiePie, among other YouTubers, was paid thousands of dollars to promote a game by Warner Brothers. I'm very curious what you say. This is an FTC judgment. FTC says that Warner Brothers failed to adequately disclose it paid online influencers to post gameplay videos of Middle Earth: Shadow of Mordor. PewDiePie, one of those streamers. Now, apparently PewDiePie said sponsored by Warner Brothers, not in the video, but in the YouTube description of the video. I don't think the FTC's gone after PewDiePie, although they do have strict rules. And our attorney said, hey, guys, if you mention a sponsor on a tweet or in an Instagram, even if you're responding, you know, somebody says to us.
That's why we got those emails now.
Yep. Somebody says to us, hey, we really love that Casper mattress, and I retweet it. I have to add hashtag sponsor or, you know, text that indicates clearly that they are a sponsor. I can't just retweet that. That's a violation of FTC rules.
No, if I can be fined. I say that on a show, I've got to identify. If I, as a recipient of your great generosity, say it in my own tweet.
We would like
I'm being
you
paid indirectly.
You'd yeah, like we you. Would like you to say.
Mm-hmm. By the way, full disclosure.
Yeah, or you see, you know, our attorney said saying hashtag ad, hashtag sponsors. Okay, I prefer to put it in the prose. My sponsor or our sponsor,
right,
Casper,
right.
Something like that.
Well, the thing about this is,
I'm fine with that. That's full disclosure. Yeah, that's appropriate.
Too, I am too. This is the new payola,
right? Customers,
we didn't know
FTC
how
says,
this got on, so now I don't know how this gets
right.
On.
FTC says customers have the right to know if reviewers are providing their own opinions or paid sales pitches. Companies like Warner Brothers need to be straight with consumers in their online ad campaign. It's interesting, though, that they went after Warner Brothers, and to my knowledge, they have not yet gone after the YouTube creators. PewDiePie's video had 3.7 million views.
Warning shot.
I think PewDiePie needs to do more than just put it in the description. Yeah. That'd be my opinion, because people don't always see the description. Plus, remember, YouTube videos can be embedded anywhere,
exactly,
and you won't see the description. It needs to be in the video at the beginning.
Well, you put a super on when you're doing an ad read, don't you?
Oh, we're clear. Yeah. I think there's never been any question that it's an ad. And
well, I don't want to trick our audience.
I have no interest in tricking anybody.
No, exactly. Like the ethical podcasts and things, they'll put some different background music on. They'll put if it's audio only, they'll put a caption on the screen.
I usually say we'll be more conversation, but first, you know, let's talk about our sponsor. At the end, I'll say we thank them for their support. I try to really make it clear there's a different lower third. Yeah. I do everything but blare a horn and say, advertisement, advertisement.
Yeah. Your voice even changes.
And my voice changes. That's unconscious, by the way. I've turned into Leo the pitch man. It's not even that this is against the law. It's that nobody in there should try to trick your community.
Right, which is the whole issue with native advertising, product placement, and that's where the advertisers are now. I was so disheartened
to learn that my favorite publication, The Atlantic, makes the bulk of its money with native content. Now, fortunately, with The Atlantic, it's clearly native content, right? It's
not. Yeah, and the courts, I think, did a superb job, and they make their money the same way, publication of The Atlantic. And interestingly, I had a conversation with Justin Smith, who was the founder of courts when he was the head of Atlantic, and Zach Seward, who was there when I was at a conference in Africa last year. And then the conversation, they said, oh, remember, I don't know who it was at courts, but somebody didn't like advertising. And so he said, this is how we're going to do it. This is how we're going to. So an editorial person kind of set the standards for what advertising should be, and then they're going to care about the user. They're going to make sure to be straight with the user. That's the issue.
That's all. Yeah. Your audience deserves that. My audience deserves that. And if I'm doing it wrong, I want to be – please tell me. I want to make sure everybody understands. It's funny because there's different cultural standards. People in the United States are used to ads, interstitial ads in the stream and stuff. And there's a long tradition in older broadcast media of people like Arthur Godfrey stopping the show and saying, and now I want to tell you a little bit, or Paul Harvey and the Bose acoustic wave radio and all of that. But in the UK and elsewhere, we get a lot of UK viewers say, what is going on with the adverts?
Yeah.
And they were shocked that a host was doing ads. I guess it's not done in the UK. I don't know.
No. I mean, well, there are tighter rules there. Like the BBC, they will actually cover up products you're using on screen.
Yeah, we used to do that too. In fact, I think we somewhat do. Look, see, you can't tell what model TV I'm using here.
But you do know the kind of nougat.
You know that I'm using fine Ferrera quality nougat. The nougat of champions. My God, somebody's eaten all our Ferrera. Notice there's plenty of Big Hunk left, but the Ferrera, it's a scarce commodity. That's because Ferrera Torone has been made in Italy with love since 1892. I wish I weren't getting money for that.
There you go.
Well, that goes.
Maybe they'll send me some nougat anyway.
We gave so much free advertising to Chipotle.
I never got a penny. And then, of course, after the E. coli scare, we haven't mentioned Chipotle since.
Didn't get so much as a free burrito for the
studio. Not even a burrito. We made a joke of it on one of our shows, The Daily Gizwiz, because we were never able to get ads. So we started doing our own ads for Tostino's pizza rolls. And then we found out that it was Totino's. We were saying it wrong for a long time. Now, needless to say, we never got any money from them either. Facebook, Twitter, and breaking news. This is a BuzzFeed report from Charlie Warzel. And, of course, it's talking about the fact that a lot of these, the live video of the shootings last week going right through Facebook. Jeff was on. We had a fantastic tweet on Sunday, Jeff. Thank you. Thank you. Siva Vaidyanathan, Doctor, Jason Heiner. If you didn't watch that discussion of how the new media is changing the conversation in this country, really a very good tweet. And thank you.
The session I had was off the record, so I won't talk about it in any detail, but Facebook brought in one of its policy executives and is on a tour of talking to journalists in New York right now about these kinds of things. And it was great because it was an open discussion, and these are really knotty issues of what you're going to do about live. And I think Facebook's attitude has shown by the fact that what they did, and I'm told that they did not take down that video on purpose or to provide breathing room. But they're trying to leave things up. They're trying to leave things out there. They're trying to go
for Twitter
is
probably very much in the same vein, right? They're going to have this. They haven't yet, but Periscope, which is a Twitter property, is and it lets you stream right to the Twitter feed.
YouTube is putting up, as everybody in the world is going to have
everybody. Live. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's a good thing.
I agree. You know, what I said, what I'll say what I said to Facebook is that I think for what they can do, they'll recognize in their data when tons of traffic is going to something. What I suspect happened with the Reynolds video was there was tons of traffic going to something, and something shuts off and says, uh-oh, watch out, could be porn.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that's the case. It was definitely an automated thing that triggered a human review.
Has to be.
And then the human review went through, and then they said, okay, put it back up.
Yeah. But number one, Facebook and YouTube et al. Will recognize when there's an unusual occurrence of traffic to a video. And then number two, when it's something that's happening in Times Square, they'll also recognize geographically, oh, here's 10 feeds from the same place showing the same stuff, must be true. So between discovery verification, the platforms will have data that we can't possibly have. New platforms like Storyful that do a wonderful job of verifying video, but the platforms will know that base data that'll make it possible to find this stuff.
Of course, Twitter trying to become a legitimate news outlet. They just made a deal to stream the Republican National Convention.
You know, I think I'm not going to watch on NBC, ABC, CBS.
I'm going to watch on Twitter.
I think I'll watch on Twitter. Huh?
Will it be in moments? How is this going to work? I don't know. I can see.
Presumably in Periscope.
I've watched news break in moments. I mean, that's the theory that you would do that. That you would see. I mean, certainly, if somebody dies, first place I see it, first place I saw that David Bowie had passed was on Twitter. The first place I saw, I don't want to go through the list, but a great many people have passed. Yeah. That's where you see it, is Twitter. And I don't think there's a reason that breaking news couldn't happen on Twitter.
I guess.
And it would be smart of them to then have on moments there is this capability. I don't know if anybody uses it to follow momentarily breaking news, right?
Yeah, but the challenge is with the convention is that it mostly isn't news.
Here's some story. Neil Farage is going to be speaking at the GOP convention.
No.
What? What? Nigel Farage?
No. Nigel, not Neil. Nigel Farage is going to Cleveland.
Is he speaking? He's just going.
To speak?
I don't know. He's attending. I can't imagine if he's there that they won't bring him up on stage. What are you going to put? Just have him in the mass of people? What the what? Solidarity.
Of course, yes. Marine Le Pen. Yeah.
Yeah, let's get Marine Le Pen out. Why not? Let's just have a. You know, what's Kim Jong-un doing these days? Is he? Bring him in. I know everybody. They're great, great people. They're leaders. They're smart people. And I have a great relationship with all of them.
I think I am going to watch it on a GOP.
Of course you're going to watch it.
For the fail whale.
Twitter will be an interesting place to watch because, you know what? Facebook tried to do this. Whatever happened to that? Remember they had streams and you would watch and there'd be all these social content going on around it. They still do that? I don't think so.
Well, they're going to be. Yeah. Facebook's going to be at both conventions, right?
They still do that?
On the sides, right.
That makes sense.
It's kind of the model we have. We have the thing live, we have the chat room going on, and Facebook has a bit of that. But it's less coherent because it's Facebook, and so it's in their sort of weird threaded thing. And so the comments you see don't make a lot of sense.
By the way, Twitter is
a natural fit for that kind of live.
Last night there was another shooting on Facebook Live, so it's not over by any means. This is from Norfolk, Virginia. Three men badly wounded, and one of them was streaming live video. You can hear 30 gunshots over 20 seconds. As the New York Times said, another night, another shooting on Facebook Live. Yeah. This is the new normal.
The British news. This was actually in the piece that I linked from the editor of the Guardian, which I can't remember.
Kath Viner,
how technology disrupts the truth.
Tell me what that means.
It's a long piece. It's very thoughtful, and she's saying it's about the end of gatekeeping by media and the.
But how does that disrupt the truth?
It is. Her contention is that before media was fact checked, and now people can go and pick their own channel and clustered with a bunch of people who believe the things that aren't necessarily true, and their sensation and so on. But to be fair to her, she then partway through talks about the Sun newspaper in the UK and the recent... they finally settled the Hillsborough thing recently. You know about this, Jeff, right? So yep. This was... it's a long time. It's 15 years ago. It's a long time, very long time ago. There was a horrible stampede inside a football stadium in the UK, and lots of people got crushed to death because they put up wire mesh netting between the crowd
right.
and the pitch.
I remember
crushed
that.
Against
yeah.
them. They died.
Yeah.
And the Sun ran some hideous story about it, saying that people had defiled the corpses and all kinds of stuff like this. Based on nothing much particularly, like based on rumours from the police and so on, and then didn't respond to this, and the sort of the lie held up for a long time, and finally they backed down from it after years later. That is an example of the gatekeepers getting it wrong and not being as challenged from it. And she rightly says, had something like that happen now. With 53,000 people present with phones in their pocket, we'd have seen the video of what was going on. The narrative, the false narrative,
which would serve the truth.
And I suppose the American equivalent would be the alleged deaths in the arena after Katrina, and the myth that was created there of people rampaging in that place when actually that didn't happen, and so on. There are these narratives that sort of take hold and become part of the discourse, and then when you go back and examine them, haven't happened. And I think that happened. This stuff gets resolved more quickly these days because more people are on site with cameras and spreading stuff through the social media. But at the same time, the other half of this is it is much easier to put together a channel full of people who all agree with each other and believe the latest conspiracy theory. So when the head of the European Commission says he's been talking to aliens, all the clusters of people who believe that the Earth is, that the leaders of the Earth are in communion with aliens, put those things up on their site and say, look, finally, more
See?
Evidence for
Proof.
Our thing. And this fits in with the other ancient aliens evidence we have over here, and right. the narrative continues. In a sense, we have this dueling truth out there. We're always going to have this. And this sort of myth that the news was the golden age of news, everything was fact-checked and true. Actually, there was just a smaller set of people controlling the narrative.
This is exactly what we talked about on Sunday, right, Jeff? This right. is exactly the question. And Jeff's always been really good on this. It wasn't better then. It's a myth that these people who controlled the news had the monopoly on truth by any means,
And let's be clear that the trust in American news media started falling in the 70s,
right.
long before the net.
Right.
Right.
And rightly, and to be honest, I think we know rightly so.
No.
But aren't we now in a better position? Yes. If you're a conspiracy theorist, you can find many more sources to confirm your belief. But that confirmation bias has always been a problem in general. But for everybody else, there are many, many choices of sources, and you get to sift them all and come to
the problem remains that we have business models built on volume over value.
Well, I agree with that.
Immediately alliterative.
Yeah.
And so I think part of what Kath is saying, in full disclosure, as I work with The Guardian, The Guardian has started a membership program, which is really a contribution program, which is her saying support quality journalism, support value. And we don't want to put a wall up, so can you please join and support us that way? And I think that we have to find various models that are going to support value and not just crappy stories about two-color dresses.
Yeah. In my opinion, if you are – this is where I have high hopes for new media and podcasting in particular. If you are more interested in serving your audience than in tricking your audience with link bait –
Right.
And you focus on serving your audience, all will be well. And I do think that that's the strong message that podcasters understand. A few people, when you get into this stuff, certainly if you're working for a big company and there's pressure to deliver views, you may fall sway to that. But I think any company that's in really smart about media says we need to serve our audience. We need to give them the information they need. We need to serve them with the best as best we can and not trick them into clicking our headlines by writing.
Yeah, Leo, and I think in tribute to what you do, I mean, I'm learning right now how difficult this is because, as you know, we've kind of pulled back a little bit on .nyc because I haven't figured out what it ought to be yet. And the essence of this is I don't know what the right relationship is with that audience to know how to serve them. And so trying to find that right voice and that right expectation is really hard. And I've always respected what you do, but I see all the more how hard it is to come up with that formula.
It's easier for us because we have a niche, right? We're serving geeks. We're serving people like me. So I know how to serve people like me because it's people like me. And I've never attempted to go beyond that. And every time we have, or I've worked for companies that have, I have been at sea because I don't know what those people want. I know what my people want. And I'm very interested in serving that community. That's my community, tech enthusiast community.
What was the McDonald's hula burger? What was the What was the hula burger of Twit?
The hula burger. Well, we did quite a few. We did a junk food show called Munchcast, which I liked a lot, but it wasn't really right up our alley. There have been a number of shows like that where we made the biggest category we made a mistake in is geek culture, and I think a lot of people make that mistake is conflating technology enthusiasts and geek culture. Mm-hmm. The cons, the comic cons, and stuff like that. We drifted a little bit in the geek culture vein, and I put an end to that because that's fine and do that. Anybody who wants to should do that. That's not what we do. We're about geek tech enthusiasts, and yes, there is there's some overlap with comic book culture, comic con culture, geek culture. But that overlap does not justify us deviating from what we know about, which is how to serve the technology audience, period. And, it's funny because we had a staff meeting yesterday and we were talking about marketing messages. And I said, it's very tempting with marketing messages, the little blurbs for each show, to put something that's going to generate traffic. And I would ask you not to do that, but to put the information that will serve our audience, tell them what they're going to expect from the show and the information in the show and how the show is going to benefit them. That's how I want you to generate traffic, not by putting a catchy headline.
Amen. Amen. Like, I don't know.
Topless
there bar. Is only one flavor of herring.
That's going to be the title, by the way. But that came about. That really was never an attempt for link bait or SEO. No. That was just jokey, right? Yeah, and it was kind of a game I would play with the audience. We kind of, this is lost in the mist of time now. But I always used to have bloopers at the end of the show. Not bloopers, but I would have long conversations. The tradition of that, long conversations before the show starts, is we were always looking for a little chunk we could then stick at the end of the show. And the title usually came from that. And the idea was to get people to listen to the whole show and go to the end. That I don't think is too bad.
Let me ask you another question.
Yes. That's not tricking anybody.
So whenever you get a new employee or whenever you get somebody who starts to understand Twit, I will just bet that oftentimes you hear the same idea. You ought to blank.
Absolutely.
And you know better. What is that?
Well, a big one with the young people especially is do a better job on YouTube. In fact, we've lost people like Chad Johnson who believe very firmly, and he's young, and he's probably right for his generation, that that's where the future was, is on YouTube. And I disagreed. But what we did is we let him start his show here. And as soon as it got good, he said, all right, I'm taking it to YouTube. And I said, all right, normally in a normal business, we'd say, no, we own this show. We own all the assets. And we put over $100,000 into generating those assets and that show's success. But you know what? I love you, Chad. So go out and go do it and have fun on YouTube. That's your mission. It's not our mission.
Right.
So that's a big one.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Nobody who comes here really says, oh, we ought to do more link bait.
I think that comes from
the top down. That comes from pressure from the boss to generate more views.
It's the business model because all we're selling is volume still. I was talking to a media company the other day and I said, listen, you have this huge reach now. And the one thing that they say in media these days is that reach is good for conversion. The problem is you have nothing to convert people to.
Yeah.
Is the mass product.
I've always said, and this is something else to tell our staff, better, not bigger. We're not trying to get more audience.
Right.
We're trying to serve the audience we have better. And we feel that will give us the best benefit. And we'll grow, and we do grow, something like 5 to 10% a year. As long as we're growing, I guess that's good. I'd hate to see us shrinking. But all of our shows grow about 10%, some more, some less. And that's fine with me. I don't want to become mass media. I think that would be a mistake.
It's a dying model.
All right, we ran out of time with that fabulous discussion.
Oh, I think we ran over, yeah.
We actually did. We have to go to TNT. So why don't we wrap things up with the back of the book, as I say. Jeff, you got a number?
Hold on.
How about you, Kevin? You got something you'd want to plug or promote?
We've changed the URL for IndieWeb, so it's now IndieWeb.org.
Oh, I like it even better because there's no camping involved.
Right. Well, the camping still happens, but IndieWeb.org is our new site.
That's a good title. That's a good IndieWeb.org. All right.
And it looks a bit cleaner.
Oh, I like it. Yeah.
We have Homebrew Website Club tonight in San Francisco, Portland, and Bellingham, Washington.
Great.
Los Angeles too, maybe? Didn't realize it was in Los Angeles. And we've got indie web camps coming up. There's one in New York in August. So pay attention to that, Jeff. Go along, bring your friends. And there's one in Brighton in September.
Fun.
And then Los Angeles in November. The other indie web stuff that's going on is that WebMention and MicroPub are still going through W3C Social Web Working Group to candidate recommendations at the moment. So that basically this is, these are the things we've been using for a while. WebMention is one site telling another that is linked to it so that you can transfer comments and RSVPs and things like that. MicroPub is letting me post to one site from another site. So giving you permission to post on my site, or rather make it easier for me to post on my site from your site. Those are sort of baseline protocols that we've moved to the W3C. They're at the stage now where we're trying to make them into actual official standards, which means if you've heard me talk about them before and was interested by them, look them up now, check them out, test your implementations. We've got test suites and test cases for both, so you can try this out. Because we need to make sure that we've got this stuff right before it gets turned into a formal standard. So this is candidate recommendation means we're in the state where we think we've got this right, but we were able to make changes to it. So help us make sure we have got it right.
Excellent. IndieWeb.org. It's all there.
Yep. Lots of stuff there.
Love that. Promoting the idea of a web standards. What a thought. What a notion. What a concept.
Yay.
Jeff Jarvis, did you find your number?
So, yeah, I did. So, two. Lufthansa on July 1 started two new flights. And this goes, I've been talking about this since going back to the days of what would Google do when I talked about what a social airline looks like. And I love this. And they're friends. I have some friends there who've been in charge of this. And I've had discussions about this, if that's disclosure. They announced a flight going from Frankfurt to San Jose. They call a lab flight. And on the flight over, it was all Samsung VR stuff.
Oh, that would be so cool.
They can try out all the technology because it's a long flight.
Great way to throw up.
They can try out the technology. Then they also have guest speakers, and you can watch on your phone or your tablet or your laptop over the Wi-Fi with the guest speakers. And then you can try out.
That's cool. I want to do that.
And on the way back, they're doing. They did sleep technology.
Fun. Are they doing more of those?
Ariana. Yeah, that's the plan.
That's kind of cool.
Sorry, just lost the
earpiece. Yeah. What a great idea.
So, yeah, I thought it was a great idea, and I wanted to give him a plug. Torsten Vingetter is my friend there who's done really neat stuff. And I guess I should also disclose I'm officially a member. I don't get paid or anything. A member of the Lufthansa Innovation Lab Advisory Board. They do – this is – I mean, why should you just be – trapped in a metal tube,
right?
As a commodity, they can make these flights special.
Well, I would guess there's a pretty brisk business from Silicon Valley to Frankfurt and back.
Oh yeah, yeah. Then the other event, you know, imagine special flights. KLM did this a while ago, where they people on social media urged them to have one flight to some kind of music conference. But you know, Germans have taken over South by Southwest. Every German I know goes to South by Southwest. They
really
love it.
Really?
Oh yeah. Marketers and Germans. So we're not funny there, but the marketers and Germans are there. But imagine special flights to South by Southwest where you know where they're going, you know who's going, you can have content going over, you can meet other people, you can try out things. It's brilliant. So airlines should be doing this more and more.
Can you imagine somebody who got on that flight by accident.
Yeah, I know.
And didn't realize what he was getting into.
Why is everyone walking around in these goggles?
Who is this guy? Why is he talking to everybody? What is this Torsten guy up to?
When's dinner?
How fun. I would love to do that.
Wouldn't that be cool? It's like you've been on these cruises.
You know what? This is one of the reasons I actually like cruises is the idea of kind of a track of education. I used to do geek cruises for years where we would do a conference, Mac Mania or something else. And I love that idea of travel plus education. I ended up being working vacations, and I don't think those two words should go together.
Yeah.
So now I do vacations. But I suspect as I get older, I could see myself ending my years on a Cunard vessel teaching people of similar vintage how to get email. Now press the send button.
You don't have goggles on.
You see
this gesture?
Yeah, okay. Now swipe left. There you go. Now you've got it.
Swipe. This is, no. Don't take out your handkerchief.
Yeah,
Use your finger.
Not wipe. Swipe. Oh, Lord. Oh, we have fun, and I am so glad. I love just sitting around with my buddies talking about interesting stuff, and there's
smart
people. There's nothing like it. Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism at CUNY. BuzzMachine.com is his blog. He's a very, very big thinker, and we love talking to him every week. Thank you, Jeff. Traveling next week, or will you be with us?
I'm going down to Florida for 2 days, but I'm coming back in time to do the show, by God.
He'll be less pink.
Last week, I was in Austin, and there was weather and equipment stuff, and I was supposed to get home at 9 p.m. I got home at 4:30 a.m. That was torture, so I'm hoping.
I need to run to get to San Francisco in time for this Homebrew Website Club. So
head on out of here, Kevin Marks.
Good timing. We're done.
Perfect timing. KevinMarks.com at KevinMarks, IndieWeb.org. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Jeff. Yes. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC on TwitLive. If you watch, join us in the chat room, too, so we can see your comments, irc.twit.tv. You can also be in the studio. I had a nice studio audience today. Welcome to all of you. Just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a seat out for you. Our new studio, I should mention this, we're going to be here. And we think we're moving August 21st, so we will not have a studio audience on August 20th or 21st because there won't be much here. The chairs will have been moved. It's possible we will have to delay it if the contractor gets behind to August 28th, but it'll either be that weekend or the next. So that's why we want you to email tickets at twit.tv so we can let you know what the plan is. I do think what we're going to do, though, that day, we've rented a motorized cable car because we can't walk to the new studio. So the plan is that Sunday, whether it's the 21st or 28th, that I will finish the radio show because we'll still have the one radio studio left, finish the radio show, and then everybody who's left will grab a few things. I'll take my Emmy and my clock. That's all I care about. And get on the cable car, and we'll have a live streaming camera with us as well, and we'll stream the drive to the new
place. You'll catch a few Pokemon along the way.
We probably will. We are Team Red here at Twit. Valor. Sorry, Chris. we will then do Twit from the new studio. And it'll be an all-in-studio Twit. So should some people will be... We could have audience for that, right? Or no?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so just email... You know what? Email us. We don't know exactly... We don't know yet how many people will fit and how many chairs we'll have and all that stuff. A team is amassing because we are now going to take Team Valor over to the seed bank and take it back for Red Team. Sorry, Chris. Thanks for joining us, and we will see you next week on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.